You want your wildlife, we got your wildlife right.
What the hell?
I thought I could do something a little bit different.
Were you rapping then?
Yeah.
Goodness,
I thought you was
no,
rapping.
No, I most definitely it. Was not yeah. rapping.
You want your wildlife, you got your wildlife.
Okay, we have your wildlife right here. Three gentlemen, myself, I don't know much about wildlife, but Graham Lyons and Michael Blenko both know a hell of a lot.
Well, I would say I know, but he knows a lot.
Okay, Graham knows a lot. Michael knows a moderate amount.
I'll say under a moderate amount. Somewhere between a bit and a moderate amount.
Okay, shut up and let me do the intro. Okay. Right. Okay, so this is episode six. Coming up, we're going to be going on a little adventure, looking for some long-eared owls with our friends Dave and Penny. And also, Graham, what you got coming up on your list?
47 new species since last time. A host of invertebrates, which I'll be talking about in depth. And also a sighting of an oil beetle somewhere in Sussex.
Me like. Okay, and...
it sounds way too professional for my life. Almost, it sounds like we know what we're doing now, which is...
And then Newtown Blenko, what's
well,
coming
no,
up?
I've got, yeah, what have you got, Michael? Let's just calm it down.
Yeah, come on, man.
I feel real pressurised now. This whole new approach to the podcast sounds a bit... I actually am really excited because actually it is... We started this podcast back in October...
October,
and yeah. We've been going through all those the dreary months of the nature calendar, you know. Okay, and now it's all kicking off. It's spring, but I've got some spring sightings. It's great. It's that great time of year when the birds are coming back in. We've got all the sightings. I've got the most boring, dull news story you've ever heard in your life. So that's something to look forward to later on. But also, very importantly, you may recall in episode five, we told the story of the Seaford panther. Remember the story? The panther broke into the house.
Oh, it was a certainty.
Yeah, was attacked by a shillelagh, and
wasn't there a games table?
There's a games table involved, but they found some fur, sent it away to be analysed to some lab or somewhere or other, and it's come back with a positive ID on that fur. So. I'll tell you what it was.
The results.
I know. It's exciting.
I can't handle it.
I'm going to tell you the results of that analysis later on in the show.
Also tonight, a bit of a first for the podcast. A film review on Natural History of Sussex podcast. Well, we'll explain all later. But first of all, what's coming up in the sightings?
Sightings. Well, we've got. We'll start with the sightings because, as I say, it is great to finally be doing this podcast with the sun shining. March was incredibly warm. The end of March, you know, we walk around in sort of a shorts and a t-shirt, and as we're here later on, it's like late at night doing the long-eared owl bit, and we're still walking around in our shorts and t-shirt. And it was March, so the bad news, of course, is we're actually in a drought. Is a hosepipe ban starts today. We're heading to summer. We're in a drought. It's been incredibly dry, but. We have plenty of wildlife sightings coming in. So butterflies. You may recall that last month we talked about all the hibernators, the commas and the small tortoiseshells. And
yeah.
They've all been out and about. But now the butterflies are actually emerging, which have been pupated over the winter. Small whites are out. I think they may have mentioned that last time. But grizzled skipper. To see a grizzled skipper in March... It's very, very unusual. These butterflies are emerging early. It's been so warm in March, it's brought their emergence dates forward.
And now we're heading for a frost tonight.
Apparently. Yeah, now it's this is the problem. These things come out early, then it turns cold, then they die. And lots of plants coming out get hit by the frost, of course. Mm. And so it's been a very, very warm March, and it's about to turn cold.
Mm.
Just in time for the bank holiday, I notice. So we've also had speckled wood. Speckled wood are out on March the 23rd. Green vein white on March the 23rd. The first orange tip, which for me is the first butterfly of spring, because that has emerged from a pupae. So orange tip, the first one was out on March the 21st at Stedham. And the day after, the first holly blue came out on the 22nd. But amazingly, at Marley Common, right over there in northwest Sussex, there was a Camberwell Beauty. Mm. On the 22nd.
Wow.
So Camberwell Beauty, it was named after Camberwell in South London.
Yeah.
You don't find them there anymore. In fact, you don't find them in Britain anymore. They're now more Eastern Europe and over that way. But they do migrate over here and they do hibernate. So it could well be that this butterfly came here last last winter, and it stayed through the winter, and a bit of warmth, it's come out. So it's a funny time, March, because there's birds migrating in, the summer birds are coming in, but there's still a few birds hanging over here from the winters, really, so from the winter sort of period. Right, so Sandwich Terns, we're back on the ternary pool at Rye Harbour on March the 1st. There's a little warbler over in Worthing early in the month, a yellow-browed warbler. I believe it was found in some... You were there, Graham.
I went to see it, yeah.
So centre of... This is your Worthing Town Centre?
Right in the middle of the town centre, right next to the main road, right next to a load of pubs. One of the strangest twitches I've been on.
Wow.
Where this little warbler is just hanging around some ornamental bushes in the car park of
a, you saw it,
an office. Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
Right. So yellow-browed warblers, more they come here more in the autumn and winter. They came from northern Europe down here. So that's probably been there for quite a few months now.
It's probably been there all winter, yeah.
And it's still hanging around, as is our little friend the Paddyfield warbler we mentioned last time.
Little brown job.
He's still there. He was there at least till March the 18th. He hung around. And... guess who's still around?
Oh, don't tell me. The rough-legged buzzard.
Rough-legged buzzard is still there. He's still... When's he going to head off? And, of course, yeah, another thing that's still hanging around, these short-eared owls. Now, you recall, we had this influx of short-eared owls in October, and they're all over the county, and we talked about it excitedly on the podcast. And now, I mean, I was out two nights ago, and I saw a short-eared owl. They're still here. I guess they, it's warm, it's been mild to us, but they probably know that where they're going back to still isn't going to be that warm when they get there, so...
Where is it they're going back to again?
They're going back to northern Europe, all that way,
okay.
So it may be nice here, but they're thinking, yeah, well, it's kind of nice here, but in Scandinavia it's still going to be minus 20, so...
I can still see those yellow eyes.
So anyway, so it all kicks off on March the 10th, because that's the first record I could find of Chiff Chaff singing in the county. Let's give us a Chiff Chaff. Yeah, you okay with that, Matt?
Yeah, the only thing was with this one, it kind of goes... Doo, 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 doo,
no, no, it's
but
really...
But I thought it goes... Doo, 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 doo,
a lot
doo,
of them do that, though. A lot of them get it a bit wrong.
Yeah, it's the most boring. The bird only has two notes to sing. That's all it has.
Chiff and a chaff.
That's all it's got.
Considering how closely related they are to Willow Warbler... Willow Warbler's song is really cool.
They're very, very similar. Very hard to tell apart. Of course, they sing very differently. Willow Warblers migrate a lot further and they come back here later. They have much longer wings.
You mean they go further south?
Yeah, they go further south.
Oh, okay.
Chiff Chaff's are little wings. They don't fly as far south as Willow Warblers. So Chiff Chaff for starting. That's great. That's one of the first sounds of spring there. The Chiff Chaff belting out. We had Gargany flying in off the sea. Hot Duck Day at on March the 14th when... A flock flew in, a small group flew in off the sea at Hove. And then, for me, the real first migrant of the year came in, Hope Gap, March the 15th. We got our first wheat ear.
Wheat ears. Now, I know I can see the picture from here, but I knew they got that sexy black line going across their,
fuck's
across
sexy.
Their face. Yeah, totally fuck.
Yeah, it's... I love wheat ears. It's always, to me, is the first real migrant that come back. You see these little birds on the coast. Wheat ears, actually, I mean, you know, I love them. I've got some facts and figures about wheat ears here because they actually are one of our longest, actually probably are the longest migration for any passerine bird, perching bird.
Perching,
yeah?
Right, yeah.
You know that, yeah? They leave Africa in January and they start passing through Algeria around mid-February time. They hit the coast here in about March, early March. Used to be big birds in the county, all across the downs. We ate them all. We ate them.
What, wheat ears?
Yeah, we ate them, yeah. It was the...
Not for the people listening, not us.
Oh, not us. No, we didn't eat them all. Oh, sorry. It wasn't us. We didn't eat them.
I was going to say, I thought that was chicken.
No, it wasn't. Sorry. Bit of wheat ear background. I'm full of wheat ear facts. I am full of wheat ear
facts.
Full of
wheat ears.
I'm full of wheat ears, yeah. It was chicken. It was chicken breast. It really was.
Oh, okay.
So wheat ear comes from the old English word whit, meaning white, and the word ears. A-E-R-S. Ears was an old word for rump or backside.
Oh.
However, right, in the 17th century, the word ears...
Yeah.
Yes.
The American way of saying
the word "s" became a rude word in Britain. It became a rude word, and
vulgar.
Yeah, and it said here some men went to say, "Well, why are they called Wheat ears.
Wheat ears.
And basically, a whole lot of stories came up. People said the bird has white ears, which it doesn't have white ears.
No, it's black ears.
It's black ears. And some say it's called the wheat ear because it departs in the harvest season. They said that to try and hide the rather crude earth ear.
There are these people,
yeah. I guess these are probably Victorians or something, but they're trying to hide the more earthier Saxon name for it. Basically, it's called a white arse.
Didn't we do a podcast with the Isabelline wheat ear?
Isabelline wheat ear. Isabelline meaning dirty pants.
So dirty pants, white bottom.
Dirty pants, white bottom. That's what it means. So they were, as I said, they were eaten in their thousands. We used to, and Daniel Defoe, he once said, "They are the most delicious taste for a creature of one mouthful."
The Daniel Defoe, isn't
that? The Daniel Defoe.
Creature of one mouthful.
Yeah. Basically, what used to happen was the shepherds around the Downs, the South Downs here, they would catch them and extra sort of income to their shepherd's salary, which I can't imagine was very much. Yeah. Greedy gourmets who wanted a fresh wheat ear would roam the Downs, because what they did do, they put a little trap by the burrows where the wheat ears would sort of nest in little holes. Oh. It's some sort of hair trap where they would sort of catch them. I think it was sort of, they would go in and it would pull like a little noose around their neck.
Oh, he's choking, wow.
Yeah, no, they're, am I choking or joking?
Both.
Yeah, they're choking and joking. So, no, it's true. So they would, that's how they'd catch them, these horsehair nooses. And then the shepherds would sell them on to hotels in Brighton and Eastbourne and as a delicacy. And the greedy gourmets, it says here, who wanted a fresh wheat ear, because they couldn't, you know, they just wanted the fresh taste of wheat ear, they would roam the Downs. If they found a dead wheat ear by an unmanned trap, they'd take the wheat ear out and leave a penny there. So there are people roaming the Downs for their fresh wheat ear.
Wow.
Yeah. Anyway, there's none left because we ate them all. That was it.
Yeah, there's a few coming in.
Yeah, all right, okay. Well, that's, anyway.
I just ask a wheat ear question? Are they the birds that when you're walking along, they'll be on a post and then they'll hop onto the next post?
Yeah, that's it. You've seen them before, yes.
It's really strange behaviour, that kind of the way they just sort of... you're walking on the ooze.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're walking on the ooze and they've got the post. There'll be one on the post and you'll approach it. And rather than it flying into a bush or flying anywhere else, it flies to the next post. And you walk a bit further down, flies to the next post. And it keeps going down like that. And
that's typical wheat ear behaviour.
Right.
But then there's probably a few birds who do that as well. So anyway, back on the migrant watch, we have spoonbills. So these are like egrets, as you say, kind of white sort of herons with like a spatula for the... For the beak.
Right.
And then on the 19th of March, we heard this noise at two sites.
Oh, well, I know what that is.
What bird is that then?
It's Isabelline wheat ear.
Yeah, no, it's the two sites in the county cuckoo were heard on the 19th of March. Quite an early date for a cuckoo to be heard.
Cool.
And then the day after, this bird started singing.
I must admit, to my ears, that sounds like a blackbird.
You're almost right.
Yeah, it's actually R2-D2.
It does sound like R2-D2.
It does sound like R2-D2.
Let's just try that again. A bit R2-D2 in the... Yeah, that's okay. Definitely R2-D2.
And I will now insert a sound of R2-D2 now.
So Black Cat, the first reported Black Cat I could find was on March the 20th, so that started singing. Then Turtle Doves in Chichester on the 21st.
Clarky.
House Martin on the 25th coming in. The first Swallow, a Battle, on the 25th. San Martin next day at New Haven, 26th. Yellow Wagtail near Crawley on the 27th. 27th, Pair of Hobbies over Arden Light Reservoir. On the 28th, this bird started singing. That's a willow warbler.
Oh, so is that the one?
That's
that
the one that looks like a
chiff-chaff,
right, but right, sounds right. Nothing like a chiff-chaff. So that descending call, willow warbler. All right.
And are they true to their name? You know, if you see willows.
Yeah. Well, I won't go that far, really, but
Well, I'll tell you a way to think about it is chiff-chaffs tend to be in more tall, mature trees, closed canopy woodland. Whereas willow warblers tend to be in more scattered trees in a more open dynamic with scrub and grassland in between.
Nice. Right.
Okay, you got that?
Great.
28th, little ring plover. The first common tern back at Ivy Lake in where we were on the bird race. First common red start. Selsey Bill. Yeah, at a Selsey Bill on March the 30th. Sedge Warblers on March the 30th at Arundel. And there, yeah, so plenty of they're all in. There's
that's nice.
And what's left?
So what have you seen yet?
I've seen Chiff Chaff, Black Cat, but they're not really that exciting. But I have seen Swallows. I saw some Swallows the other day.
Really?
Yeah, I saw a pair of Swallows a few nights ago. They're flying quite late at night. It's about 7:45 in the evening, and I saw two Swallows go over, and a bat was chasing them, which I thought was quite interesting. But
that's great.
I saw about 30 or 40 sand martins in Cambridgeshire.
It's all kicking off.
Spring has begun.
Is that your sightings done?
That's the butterflies and birds. That's what I got for the minute. Have you got something for me?
I've got a few bits. Couple of things. First of all, a moth that won't make it into my list because I've already seen it. Last year, Penny Green will be featuring later on in this episode. Last year, we found a rare moth, Panchalia swartzella, a red data book moth. At Mill Hill. It hadn't been recorded in Sussex until 1931. It's a beautiful little thing, sort of black with orange and silvery stripes, like a tiny little tiger. I found it at Morling Down, just at the back of Lewes.
Mm.
This was last year. Again, you know, new site for it, hasn't been recorded for many, many years. And we were up there the week before last, and we had it in March. Just one specimen. So it's on the wing, and if you've got the time to go up and have a look for it, it feeds, the larvae feed upon violets. So on the chalk it'll be hairy violet.
Hairy violets.
So go up and have a look in the coombe, on the south facing slope of the coombe, where there's a lot of violets, and look for a tiny little moth, and there's a chance that you might find the scarce violet cosmet.
Cosmet?
Cosmet.
Cosmet.
Wow, I love it.
So what's the scientific name?
Panchalia swartzella.
Panchalia swartzella.
I find this time of year really, really exciting. Not so many naturalists are out recording. So a lot of the species at this early stage, and similarly later on in the year, are quite under-recorded. So there's a very good chance you can find something really good.
Mm. The reason I enjoy it is that it's actually really easy at this time of year. There's actually few things are starting to come up. And there's only a few butterflies around, so you can kind of get your eye in for the butterflies.
Mm.
With the plants, there's a few plants start coming up. There's wood anemones and celandine, and it just okay. You can kind of handle it.
Yeah.
After sort of April and May, it goes crazy. It's like the moment you've got black cap singing. Great, you can walk around, you can identify black cap.
Yeah.
But in a few weeks' time, you've got garden warbler. Turn up. Garden warbler sounds just like black cap, and so
we have a bird called garden warbler.
Yeah, I've never heard
of that.
It's probably the most boring bird you've ever seen, but it's a lovely voice.
One last sighting. About a week ago, got an email from one of my colleagues, Katie Parker, saying that she'd seen an oil beetle at Ardingly.
An oil beetle.
Now, what's that? Is that the bubbling sound of oil? So the oil beetles that come out this time of year, I was quite excited because it's almost certainly been a species I haven't seen. Now, I had a look at the photo. It is indeed an oil beetle. But sadly, I'm not confident from the photo that we'll be able to get an idea in it. You can't go by the colour.
Do you have this photo?
Yeah, and I've got permission to use it, so we can put that up.
I've got a photo. I'm going to use it.
What?
I'm going to put it on the website.
Now, oil beetles.
Yeah, why?
Well, they're amazing. They have an amazing life cycle. Oil, in the sense that when they're threatened, they extrude oil from their joints. An oily substance, which puts off predators. Yeah. And I've seen photographs of it. It's quite bizarre. But what's most fascinating about these things is their life cycle. They parasitise bees. Hypermetamorphic is how they're described. So when the larvae is very, very small, it's incredibly active. It has a free-clawed claw. It crawls up very actively to the top of flowers and awaits the arrival of a bee.
Mm.
Where it will grab onto the bee and catch a lift, fly with the bee into the bee's burrow, where it will prey upon the bee larvae and the food stores that are left there for the bee. As it becomes bigger, it loses the need to be very, very active and stays within the bee's burrow, and then eventually emerging as an adult, which is completely flightless. So what I really love about this thing is you have a beetle that can't fly for toffee as an adult, but hitches a ride as a young buck. on the back of a bee. Yeah. And that's, it gets around because of that. They get around.
And I'm gripped. I was gripped by that story. I was sitting there like open mouthed. It's amazing.
Isn't that
absolutely
cool?
Amazing.
So if you want to see oil beetles, you need to be where there are bees.
Like a beehive.
You need, well, no. Not honeybees. Bees that are going into the ground. So andrenas, your mining bees. So a south-facing bank with lots of bare ground. Think at this time of year, if you're looking in places like that with lots of mining bees, lots of bare ground, lots of activity, there's a chance you might see an oil beetle. It'd be really exciting if you did find one to let us know, let Bug Life know, because they're doing their oil beetle hunt. And it'd be a really good find, and I want to see black and violet oil beetle.
Right, so
so that's sightings. So for this month's adventure, I'm really excited because the only owl I've ever seen in the wild is
a tea towel.
a short-eared owl that I went to see with Michael a while ago.
That's not a bad start. The first owl you've seen is a short-eared. So you haven't seen tawny owl yet.
No,
you've heard tawny owl. Twit to words.
I mean, I've seen owls. I've had owls sitting on my shoulder when I was at primary school. But
what was that about? You're a Hogwarts zone,
pretty much.
What go to?
It was a kind of Hogwarts. No, there was someone who was coming. You know, you get the portrait photos done, and they go, "Here, they put an owl on your shoulder." Some people choose to have a toad. Some people choose to have a black cat. No, not really.
So can you just go and put an owl on your shoulder for a photo?
Yeah.
So the short-eared owl is the only owl you've seen in the world. Yeah, and that's absolutely. The one you waved at with me, yeah?
That's the one I waved at, yeah, absolutely. Okay. So I'm very excited. We're meeting up with a great couple of people, Penny and Dave, and they're going to take us out. And hopefully we're going to see and or hear the elusive long-eared owl.
Who's that?
Think of me as a friend.
Where do you come from?
The question is, where have you gone? The first thing I will tell you is, the owls are not what they seem.
Right, well, here we are. It is, unbelievably, it's actually the end of March. I say unbelievably because it's been so hot. It's been incredible the last few days. Graham's got his T-shirt and shirt on. We're standing here on a lovely warm evening. So we're joined tonight by two lovely people, Dave and Penny Green.
Hello.
Hey! There they are.
Hi!
And, well, the reason we had to get Dave and Penny Green involved because we wanted to come out tonight to look for long-eared owls. And if there's anyone in the county who knows about long-eared owls, it's these pair.
Leos.
So the bird is a long-eared owl. So you take the first letters, it becomes Leo, and it's a lot easier to say.
So it's dusk, so I'm guessing they're nocturnal.
They're the most nocturnal owls. Sort of, we have five breeding owls in the UK most years, and of the five, they're the ones which are the most nocturnal. You have things like short-eared owls, their cousins, which will regularly hunt during the day. I think you saw some a while ago.
Indeed.
Long-eared owls look like them, but their hunting strategy is completely different. They're hunting completely through the night. They normally start hunting just after dusk, hunt for a couple of hours, stop, have a break, digest their food, and then they hunt again. And it gets a bit difficult for them in the middle of summer when they've only got sort of 4 or 5 hours of darkness. When they're forced to hunt, when there's a bit more light in the sky, and they're invariably not as successful then.
Do some owls lean more towards their sense of hearing for catching and some lean towards more looking?
Absolutely. So with the long-eared owls, they're concentrating an awful lot on using sounds to locate their prey.
Their long ears?
They're not the ear tufts that you're thinking of. They're holes in the side of their heads that are covered by feathers, basically.
Oh, okay.
And in those holes, they're also at different heights as well. Different angles on the head. So that allows them to get a much better idea where the prey is. And so by having different size ear slits and also having them at different angles, they can locate their prey, and they've been recorded hunting in 100% darkness, so in laboratory conditions.
Wow.
And they do use their sight, and they've got very good sight, much better than ours, for sort of in the evening time. But it's actually sound which they're mainly using to locate their prey. Yeah. And this is partly why they may have suffered, well, all owls have suffered over the last few winters when there's been heavy snow cover for a long period of time. So although they can hear their prey beneath the snow cover, it makes it very, very difficult to catch it. But the owls here, they'd be hunting largely by sound.
What sort of noises do they make? And can you do
impressions,
any
impressions, please?
I can do impressions.
Excellent.
Okay. So the male sounds quite like someone, it's like quite a resonant sound, like someone blowing over a bottle. And it's quite a deep kind of, whoo, kind of call. Hopefully we might hear one later. Sometimes they go, whoo, 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 like that, which is pretty cool. And it does sound just like someone blowing over a bottle.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then the female has quite a reedy call. And it's a bit like Marge Simpson. It kind of goes,
I've never heard Marge Simpson with that noise. I mean, it's a nice noise.
It's a little bit like Marge Simpson.
Do you mean when she goes, mmm, or something, her grumble?
That was Kermit the Frog.
That was Yoda.
It's all Frank Oz, I guess. So
Yeah.
While we're here doing impressions, you also do a very good marsh frog. Is there a chance of capturing your marsh frog onto tape?
Yeah,
okay. Are you ready?
That.
Yes, it's very good. That's great, isn't it?
That is amazing. Good,
it? It's like being there.
Amazing.
It really,
I'm not even going to describe how you did that, just because it. Yeah, that is incredible. That was really good.
So, long-eared owl is it'll be our smallest native owl, won't it?
Yes. Yeah. I'm guessing barn owls.
Someone brought the little owl across for a laugh a few centuries ago, but actually it's a tiny little thing. So we have, let's get this right, Penny, we've got little owl at the bottom, then long-eared owl, which is considerably bigger, then I guess barn owl, short-eared owl, tawny owl, and then eagle owl.
And then maybe snowy owl.
Snowy owl.
Then eagle owl.
Have you seen snowy owl in Britain?
In Lincolnshire when I was a kid, twitched it. It looked like a carrier bag in a field of beans.
Oh, that's so romantic.
It didn't even get up the hour that we were there.
Was it, when you say carrier bag, I mean, you know, you think of the carrier bag in American Beauty, and caught on the flurry of it. Was it like that, or were we talking like a Tesco's bag
like
outside?
Tesco's bag.
Okay. Oh, there's a cow's getting excited.
I think there's a good chance, if we walk along at this time of night, they're very often start to fly anyway. And as you walk down here, there's a reasonable chance of seeing. And we also got a thermal imaging camera with us. Sometimes that can pick up a long-eared owl. They're actually very well insulated, but sometimes you can see sort of around their eyes and such like, you actually get to see a bit of the colour.
Wow, so, that is a sexy piece of kit. So it kind of looks like a... I can't even describe it. What does it look like?
It looks like a very expensive torch
with a kind of a mobile phone attached to the front of it, with it sort of iPhone size screen, and it's all gone a bit predator, really.
It's fantastic. You can look down at the floor.
Wow, you can really see how warm the mud is, and as you say about like beetles and stuff.
The friction burn.
Oh, wow. So you're just scraping the ground with your foot,
yeah,
and for that moment it raised the temperature up. Can you just point it to Michael and Penny? So you can really...
What are they doing?
You can really see
my
quite wife's clearly.
Got very, very hot legs. And then in two
white,
ways.
White hot.
The thing is with this shore is that, every day there's, people walking dogs and cycling past here, and the long-eared owls will be right next to the edge of the track, but they're so confident in their camouflage, because they are really well camouflaged, and their tufted ears actually help break up their outline. That's one of the reasons for having them.
I was going to ask.
So they're not worried by people because, you know, they're quite comfortable where they're sitting, that they can't be spotted.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But as soon as, obviously, people come too close, that's when they're going to flush. But at this time of night, they're sort of just getting ready to go out hunting, so hopefully we'll pick one up in a minute as it's leaving the roost.
Wow, that's brilliant.
Tawny owl calling.
Oh, that one. That's a cow.
And that's a blackbird. Cow again.
Another blackbird. Robin.
Jackdaws.
What's this?
Bat.
Yeah.
Oh, two of them.
You see, dives down. No, over there.
The big one.
The big one, it goes up and sort of drops really quick.
Oh, okay.
So Noctule was one of the first bats to come out.
Noctule.
But as big as a swift.
Yeah, big old thing.
And high.
But they fly up high and they drop quite a lot.
Wow.
Which we just saw that one do.
Turbulence.
And they're normally very loud.
It's the one bat I could probably say with any certainty that that's a Noctule because of the size and the flight.
The behaviour. Apart from that. Because it did seem to fly sort of a bit slower than what I would normally expect to see a bat.
Tawny owl calling again now.
We've heard the tawny owl over there, and like we were saying earlier, where you find tawny owls in Sussex, you very rarely find long-eared owls, or we've very rarely found them. So the tawny owl and long-eared owl, they don't particularly get on. The tawny owl's a bit bigger, it's a bit of a bully boy, and it will push long-eared owls out. So somewhere like this, we've got tawny owls in that woodland over there. The long-eared owls would probably be very, very happy being in that woodland, but because there's tawny owls, they can't be, and they get pushed out to this marginal habitat here. So for tawny owl, there's no nesting sites here, but for long-eared owl, they've been pushed out. At least they can nest here. It's better than nesting nowhere.
Yeah.
And when you look at country like Ireland, or you look at the Isle of Wight, where there aren't any tawny owls, or in the case of the Isle of Wight, I think there's very rarely recorded, you get much higher population densities of long-eared owl because they're fulfilling the niche of tawny owl as well over there.
Oh. It is so much about niches and habitats, isn't it?
It really is, and for species like this, people say, oh, that's long-eared owl's niche, that's what it likes. That's completely incorrect. It's probably not what the long-eared owl likes here.
Yeah.
It's just that the long-eared owl can survive here, whereas the tawny owl won't kick it out.
Yeah.
Okay, Matt, so I'll just say we're losing light pretty quickly now. It's
planets are out.
The planets are out, so we're out to torchlight now, and we're just shining our torches around, getting the beams out across the fields. And Graham suggested we should look on some of these fence lines here, because we may see some leos perched on the top.
Dark. Laughing. The owls were flying. Flashlights passed by in the woods over the ridge. The owls were near, further up over the ridge. The owls were silent.
Oh, you want to see this?
This is a nice moth. It's an early thorn.
Early thorn.
Thorn, T-H-O-R-N. Okay. That's near bigger. We've got near a bigger pot. I've got a bigger pot here, sorry.
Okay.
It's a nice. The thorns are a lovely family of moths which showed their wings. Quite a distinctive angle. If I can put the light back on it, Dave, a second, just a little bit of light. I shall go in for the.
They
all look a bit like dead leaves. Really nice.
Quite romantic.
Yeah.
Look at that. So that's very autumnal colours. It does look like a autumnal dead leaf. Yeah.
It's got like little moon shapes on its wing.
Oh, yeah.
And do you know what they're meant to be? It's a pink, dusky colour.
Crescents. People think that it's meant to represent a sort of hole in the leaf, so a chink of light can come through.
Oh.
So it's one of these things that's known as disruptive camouflage because it helps to break up the outline.
Like the long-eared owl's ears or tufts.
Yeah. Yeah, possibly.
Exactly
yeah.
like that. It's useful.
Nice link.
That's very good, isn't it? He's a bit
flighty.
Yeah.
Oh.
That was long-eared owl.
Did you hear it?
Yeah, I heard that.
I was looking at it. I was looking there. I thought someone was in.
That's definitely a male.
That's a dog.
No, it was up there.
Oh. Matt, did you hear it?
I definitely heard it.
I heard it.
I didn't hear it.
That was definitely a long-eared owl.
It wasn't Matt going, ooh.
No,
it was up there.
It sounded quite distant.
So yeah, it was quite a way up there. But Matt did go, ooh.
He's Matt
and Al. You've got the light on, David. So I can just see if this moth.
Matt, did you go woo?
Matt,
I think you go woo. Yeah.
Should we get a bit of a.
Yeah, I was just thinking about what long-eared owl stories I could recall, and I only have one, but it was when I was volunteering at Dungeness RSPB Reserve back in 2001. And we used to get them roosting right outside of the accommodation.
Oh.
And one night behind the moth trap that was right in front of the accommodation, there was the bushes behind the moth trap, and one just came and sat perched right out in the open.
No.
Yeah, the best thing was, you could stand out on the back doorstep and it couldn't see you. so you could set the telescope up, look at it, and I looked through the telescope, sort of front lit with a moth trap, and its face filled the whole field of view of the telescope.
Wow. So,
yeah, that was pretty cool. It couldn't see me because of the light from the moth trap.
And the first time we ever saw Longyear Owl sort of on the downland in Sussex was actually when Penny and I were doing a glowworm survey. We were just going down and we were recording a number of glowworms along a certain track. And then a Longyear Owl juvenile screeched from just beside us. So we looked up, really stunned, and it's this incredibly cute, fluffy little owlet looking back at us.
It's too early to have their tufts, is it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. They're just a mound of fluff on top of their head at that age. Really cute. And then we heard an adult sort of go, whoa, as if it was telling it off. And so we started retreating and walking back up. We got to the end of our survey anyway, and it followed us. And it seemed really intrigued. It was very, very interesting. It was head bobbing and trying to have a look at us and kept on walking towards us. So
that's amazing.
We had to lug it.
Oh, my God.
But it was one of the best things I've ever seen. So it's 9:15. We've got to the kind of the top of the downs here. We had a possible. What do you say? Do you think you heard a long-eared owl?
Pretty certain.
Yeah, I thought it was.
Yeah, we heard a male call once, and then that was it.
And that's like the bottle over the top of the bottle blow kind of sound.
Yes.
Are we going down there, Dave?
No.
Keep to the road.
Because that goes down, and then it's got a massive uphill. And it's
not... You ever kicked flints? I'm not suggesting you necessarily should be doing it right now.
Have what?
No, it's kicked flints. So it's very flinty here.
Oh.
And if you...
Oh, what, they spark, do they?
Flint? Yeah. So, see if we can get it going.
Oh!
Flinty sparks.
That's awesome. So pick up a bit of flint.
Yep,
kids, try this at home.
Not when there's any longer down sort of stuff.
No, exactly. And it's dark now. And then just luzz it. And it sparks beautifully on the ground. And then we give it a go with my pathetic cricket arm. Oh, yeah, that's nice. That's really satisfying. It's kind of like those little bangers. You know, those little
snappers.
So what is this?
Right, this is bird poo. It's
so
lots,
white.
Lots of droppings, and they're all in one very concentrated area, which means that there's a bird regularly roosting above this site.
Mm.
So, firstly, I mean, it's not just one dropping. There's, 20 or 30 here. Looking at them, they're mainly white with very little amount of black in them, which is quite strongly suggestive of a bird of prey or an owl, because they're bringing a pellet up, which is getting rid of all of the bones and the fur from their meals. So not all the fur, but a lot of it.
Yeah.
The actual droppings are very white with them, and virtually like tissue paper, and that's one of the ways we survey for long-eared owl roosts, going out looking for this sort of tissue paper all over branches.
Yeah, I mean, it really is noticeably, almost like white paint has been spattered.
And I'm going to say this is very unlikely to be long-eared owl, or in fact it's not, because there's no pellets. And they regurgitate one pellet during their nighttime hunt, and they regurgitate the pellet of their second evening meal the next day at roost. And so we can't see any black pellets around here, so unfortunately, I don't think that's long-eared owl, probably something like a kestrel.
Okay. So do you get kestrels and that, and other birds of prey, they don't have pellets?
Kestrels do, actually.
Oh, do they?
Penny was saying at work recently, one of her colleagues watched a robin bring a pellet up. And it actually looks like a lot of birds will produce a pellet if they've eaten something they just can't digest correctly. Digest and go through a digestive tract.
So like a furball?
Yeah, like a furball.
Okay, it's 11:15. What have we seen, guys?
Some moths.
We saw a few moths that we've all seen before.
Good moth action. Not me.
Okay.
First for me.
Common Quaker.
Yeah.
We heard a tawny owl way off.
Lots of bats.
Lots of bats. The bats were potentially the highlight, actually.
Big bat.
Noctual.
Noctual.
Yeah. I'm about 62.5% sure I saw a long-eared owl.
Yeah.
And then three of the five heard one, and Matt and I were the two that didn't.
But you heard of me going...
But I heard you. That's all that matters, mate.
Oh, look, the mist is settling in now.
Yeah, we should go.
Threats coming in.
Well, we'd just like to say a big thank you for showing us around.
Hopefully we've armed the listeners with some information to help them go out and find long-eared owls for their own.
Absolutely.
Yeah, go
absolutely.
Find your own long-eared owls.
Among my many tasks is the maintenance of deep space monitors aimed at galaxies beyond our own. We routinely receive various communications, radio waves and gibberish, Agent Cooper. Till Thursday night, row after row of gibberish, and all of a sudden, the owls are not what they seem.
So that was good. So we didn't see, and most of and Michael and I didn't hear the long-eared owl. Although Graham and Penny and Dave
Graham claims it goes in. Well,
yeah, I heard it. I saw it. I smelt it. I felt it.
But to be honest, it was a really good night. You know, we learned a lot about long-eared owls, and it really was amazing. And okay, so we didn't see or hear them, but. As we were leaving.
Oh, yeah. As we were leaving.
Yeah. I mean, Penny had said that we should keep an eye out on the post as we're driving away, which we duly obeyed. And, this is what happened.
God, it takes me back to Burbrace.
Yeah. You can see Matt from the back seat there.
Yeah.
It's getting a bit steamed up, actually, in the front here, Graham. I don't know. We're just scanning every post.
Barn owl.
Barn owl. Oh, look at him. He's so gorgeous. He's sitting there. We're like 3 metres away, and he was sitting on the post, and the barn owl just like looked at us, and I didn't wave, but then it just flew off with its large white wings pumping. Beautiful. Absolutely beautiful.
That's all right.
Was that a tick for you?
That is a tick for me. My first barn owl in the wild.
So there's that. So this is now the man they're calling Matthew Two Owls Davidson.
Twowls.
Twowls.
That's right, yep. BA honours, MA, Two Owls.
So that's short-eared owl on the list. Mm. That's barn owl on the list.
Barn
now.
Owl, yep.
So that's
all
great.
All I need.
Well, we need little owl. We need tawny. Hey, we've got to show this guy a tawny owl.
I really want to see a little owl as well. They sound...
Little owl, okay. So
little,
it's not a...
Charmers. Now I think, well, picture a man going on a journey with a book. He's writing things down. In fact, he's writing down every single species that he can come across in the British Isles. If you're lucky and he hasn't seen you, you might just make Graham's list.
Now, I'm 47 species up from this time, like the last time we recorded. And it's all gone very invertebrate heavy, which is good. I like this time of year. So I'll just quickly whiz through the increases since last time. 20 beetles. I'm up 20 beetles.
That's a lot. That's a lot.
One aculeate, and I finally got... And that aculeate is my first ever hairy-footed flower bees. This is Amphophora plumipes.
Sorry, clarification... What?
Aculia. Too many words, too quickly.
Sorry, let's start again.
Aculia hymenoptera, so bees, ants and wasps. That's the Aculia hymenoptera.
Oh, okay, right.
And within the bees, there's this thing called the hairy-footed flower bee, the Latin name being Amphophora plumipes. Now, that is a really smart-looking thing. It's not particularly scarce. I'm just not very good at bees, so that's why I haven't seen it before.
So the hairy-footed flower bee.
If you want to see this bee, it comes to early spring nectar sources like violets and ground ivy seem to be particularly good.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
Like a smallish bumblebee, very gingery, but it's got a long yellow, long sort of pale yellow face and a very long black tongue. But it's very active, makes quite a high-pitched whining sound as it's travelling between flowers. Three moths. We went in search of a rare moth at Erith Rocks a few weeks back, which we failed to see. But it was really great being out at the rocks.
at night, I was scanning around with my half-powered torch, and I did get a rather exciting millipede for my troubles. Okay. But we did get one micromorph, Semioscopus avellanella, which...
Semioscopus avellanella.
Yeah, okay. Semioscopus avellanella. So that was a new one for me.
Semioscopus avellanella. I like saying
so
that.
You look so happy when you say that.
I know.
11 spiders. And I should point out, three new species I've had in the last month in my own house.
In a way, really?
Which is really, really exciting. Most exciting of all was last night. I opened my cupboard at about 9 o'clock in the evening to see a spider that I was pretty sure was going to be something I'd seen before.
In your cupboard?
In my cupboord, yeah. Okay. 9 o'clock at night. Psilochorus simoni. Now, I brought simoni along with me tonight, so do you want to meet him?
Oh, no way, really?
It's in my pocket.
Mike was not too sure about this.
Wait a minute, before you get this thing out of your pocket, how long has it been? That's been there all the time. I've been sat here.
Yeah.
Right, now, where's the door? Right, the door's behind me. Now, I'm actually okay with these day long leg spiders. The ones I have, these are quite big ones in this room. Okay, all right.
You ready? Here's my little friend Simon I.
Where is it?
Look at it, that's an adult. Can you see it?
Oh, I don't like it.
Now, in the book...
That's really small, it's like...
In the book, it describes it as having a globular body, and it is a very globular body.
It's like it's got an aniseed.
Look at it closely. If you look at it closely, it's bluish-green.
Oh, really?
It's a bluish-green colour. And that's how I recognised it instantly, because I've been reading up on it. Keeping my eyes peeled.
Yeah, I can see it being bluish.
Bluish, yeah. This species is found infrequently in England and Wales, and there are... few records from Scotland. I was getting really excited, thinking I'd found something really, really wonderful. But
yeah.
I read on to find it is thought to be of American origin, imported first into France and then into Britain on wine bottles.
Oh my God!
It's the way they move, man. It's the way they move.
Psilochorus simoni. My latest addition to my list at 9 o'clock last night. Right, two flies, three bugs. Two millipedes, thanks to Andy Phillips, he lent me the key to millipedes. And on the very first night I had it at Aries Rocks, managed to find one of the biggest millipedes. It's a real beast, about 5 millimetres wide, 35 mil long. One snail. Now, the snail is quite a good one. We were out on a certain site looking for moth larvae a few months back. Do you remember?
Oh, yeah.
And do you remember we did a little gimmick where Michael and I both found a snail...
Yeah.
And revealed it to each other. I had a limpet.
Yeah.
And you had the shell of a thing called Helichala atala.
And you had mollusk envy, as I recall. Yeah. He was envious of my mollusk.
So much that I went back in the daytime and failed to find a living specimen. Oh, yeah. I think I found one more empty shell. I didn't find any more. Walking around Seaford Head, I saw about 100 of them. One slime mould.
Of course.
Now, what was the name? I've forgotten the name. I haven't written it down.
Well, I call it Enteridium lycoperdon, but I think it's Reticulum lycoperdon.
That's the one, yeah. But Howard Matcham kind of identified it for me. You're familiar with this thing.
I have.
I've never seen it before.
It's this thing. So honestly, Matt, you've got to hear this. This is incredible. You're walking along in the woods, right?
Yeah.
Look up at a tree. There's this huge, like a shining silver blob on the tree.
Oh.
It looks like something has just landed there from Jupiter or something. It looks so out of place. It looks so out of space. That's what I'm saying.
I like it.
And, man, and Graham, I think Graham nailed it, because Graham said it looked like...
I thought it looked just like the T-1000 from Terminator 2.
You know when that guy melts and he's sort of...
Yeah, when he goes to molten metal.
Metallic blob. It's actually a slime mold. And slime molds... Don't even go there with slime molds, man. They're like, what? They're animals, but they're like mushrooms at the same time or something. I read a book about slime molds a while back, and it just blew my mind. I decided to forget all about it because it takes the kind of the whole fundamental knowledge of what it is to be alive and just turns it upside down.
Wow, slime molds. Cool.
We should do an episode on slime molds. Believe me, we would.
Howard would be up for that.
You really?
Let's get Howard back.
Let's get Howard back in, because honestly, it is that they are just like, one minute they're sort of birds and they're fish, and it's incredible. We'll put a picture of Graham's lycoperdon up on the.
Lycoperdon.
Hey! Anyway.
Four plants.
Now, four new plants.
Four new plants. And right, I would like to talk about how great Sussex is for plants.
Yeah.
But I'm afraid they were in Suffolk. Yeah, I left the county and went to the Brex weekend. I'm just getting a bit confused with my update from the last time, because there is definitely one bird that I don't think I'd reported on last time, which was...
Oh, I know what it was, because I'm not happy about it.
He's not happy about it?
I ain't happy
about it.
Mike, you got your bee in your bonnet about
something.
Yeah,
he's got his hairy-footed flower bee in his bonnet.
This listing thing. See, I've got a problem with listing, which is probably episode 6 is a time to admit it all.
Here it comes.
Well, no, it's fine. I think what Graham does now, he lists this whole pan species thing he does. He lists various species. And in doing so, you know, he's involving people in looking for beetles and for snails and for slime molds and stuff.
Slime molds, yeah.
And through his blog and, I guess, through the podcast, I'm seeing people get more involved in a variety of species and families and groups, whatever.
It's working.
I think it's working. You know, even I'm interested now in... not spiders, but everything else apart from spiders.
It's not all about birds and butterflies.
But something I've always hated is twitchers. Twitching. These are the people who just go around and keep a little list of all the birds they see, which to me is absolutely pointless.
Come on, get the hate out, get it on the table.
Well, I'm just saying that I've never... It's just, you know, it's not conservation, it's not being a naturalist, it's just being... just listing, and just it means nothing. These birds that get blown across from America to Britain, they're here, they're going to die. You know, they're not going to turn around and go back. It's not important. And these people tear around the country listing little birds in a list and put it in their drawer, and they show their mum and all sorts. I'm not into it. And going to see the yellow throat in Wales, to me, is like, well, it's great, but... why did you go all the way to Wales to see one little bird, which you admitted wasn't that impressive?
Okay, Graham Lineser, rejoinder.
I suddenly realised that I'd never seen an American warbler, any American warbler in Britain, ever, because I've never been to America.
Yeah.
So I really wanted to see it, and...
just travelling somewhere to see something which you know is there, has been identified already... someone's going to point it out to you. You put it on a list. Yeah. I just don't see the point. If I did just that, nothing else, no.
Then I think you'd probably have a point. But because I see a small amount of twitching as part of a healthy diet of natural history.
I think what you're doing now, listing and exploring and promoting wildlife in general, I think has a value. But I think just... listing little brown birds which lurking under some bracken.
Yellow,
some,
it was yellow.
Well, you know, yellowish brown.
There's worse things that bird watchers can do than twitching in terms of wasting time, which is year listing birds, especially sort of county year listing, driving around seeing the same birds year after year, ticking them off.
Right, yeah.
That to me is pointless.
Yeah.
There's a lot of effort and energy goes into that, whereas you could just go and learn a new group, and it's really easy. Mm. Just get up and go out and do it. Buy a microscope. Buy a new book. Which brings me to this. New book. It arrived through the post today. There's finally a key to caddisflies.
Yeah, so see, before I met you, I didn't even know there was a thing called a caddisfly.
Well, I mean, caddisflies have been... I've only got two species on my list. They are a mystery to me. And now I have a key with photographs. So these will be turning up in the moth traps, in the wetlands... and rather than ignoring them now, I'll be able to have a go at them.
There is so much you can do in this country to help wildlife, whether it's recording the birds, doing surveys and stuff. Fantastic. Getting involved with active conservation work. Get your bow saws out. Cut some woodlands down. Anyway, you can get involved in so much, which actually could have a positive impact on the wildlife of this country. And at a time now where our wildlife is in such a critical state, we don't have time for weird people and weird lists.
Oh, you're doing so well. You're doing so well. You almost have me there. Okay,
weird people and weird lists.
If you've got thoughts about this matter, then you can drop us a line at thenaturalhistoryofsussex@gmail.com. Yeah, drop us a line and tell us your thoughts, and maybe we can continue the discussion on the next podcast.
Well, guys, we had an email.
Who's it from?
From Ingen Ruffles. So Ingen says, I have been meaning to send a comment to say how much I enjoyed all the podcasts. That's very nice.
All of them.
And especially the bird race. Who would have thought listening to three people bird watching could be so exciting? Nice. That's quite nice.
That's really nice.
But actually, it reminded me, because Graham mentioned a while back about a film that came out called The Big Year. It was based on bird watching. And I do have a copy of The Big Year on DVD now, so I thought perhaps we could do our very first, and probably last, film review.
There's going to be major fallout in a few hours.
Nuclear fallout?
Bird fallout.
All right, so we just watched the film, and... I'm looking at two really tired guys.
Well, it's early in the morning now, isn't it? So should we go around to like out of 10? So that was the Big Year, Steve Martin, Jack Black, and Owen Wilson.
Yeah,
I'm going to start, and I would get 5 out of 10 that film. I didn't. Yeah, it was all right. Mm. I think if you weren't into bird watching, then it would be awful. I mean, the only interest was there were some birds in it every now and again, which kind of kept me watching it.
Yeah, I mean, I give it maybe a 6.
Ooh.
As I started to say, I think in a way I'm maybe a bit of a target audience in the fact that I know a bit about birding, but not that much. I think I really liked everything that the executive producers of that film probably disliked, and I hated all the things that probably the executive producers put in to make it a more commercial film.
Yeah, okay, yeah. I give it 3 out of 10.
Oh,
I thought it absolutely sucked.
Oh,
I hate CGI birds.
Yeah,
at this point, you did fall asleep for about half of that film, so maybe
it didn't make any difference to understanding the plot. That really, really wound me up though was that the bird watching was generally seen as a negative, and that really the only path to salvation for these characters was breeding.
Hmm.
Well, breeding.
I must admit,
most of it revolved around breeding.
It did show twitches up, twitches to be, kind of self-obsessed idiots. So actually, for that point, I shall give it 7 out of 10 now, because I did totally agree with my point about twitching, which is basically it's pointless. And yeah, actually, a classic, I say, absolute classic.
What's next?
It's Naturama.
Next up is Naturama.
Naturama. Not much to report. It's going to be a very brief report this month. Huge news item from the Mid Sussex Times on Friday, March the 30th. I cannot believe this ever made it into any newspaper or website. It's basically
what is it?
Birds are the likely cause of rubbish left in the road.
Oh, yep. There's a split open black
birds?
Bin bag.
Well, there's a bag of rubbish has been
two nappies
has been left in the road.
Yeah,
and well, that's made the news. it just says scavenging gulls have probably done it. The rubbish included a bunch of flowers, but was soon cleaned up by workers. And I cannot think of a less newsworthy news item I've ever seen in any publication.
Which publication?
This is the Mid Sussex Times website. Basically, there's a bag of rubbish in the street. So the other news story comes from the Sussex Express on the 29th of March. Just a story about the number of buzzards circling above the skies of Sussex. And just, I mean, I've been here for about 25 years. I've been living here now. Is that right? When I first came here, you know, buzzards were quite a rare sight. But now it's, I guess, one of the commonest birds of prey we see, isn't it, Matt? Graham, you think?
Yeah, probably is. I'd say, I think I probably see a buzzard more often now than kestrel and sparrowhawk. Definitely. Oh. Definitely, sparrowhawk.
It's certainly not really noteworthy anymore, is it, to see a buzzard?
Just, no.
Of course, there's another bird now moving into the county, which... it's quite a rarity, but it's on the rise, and that's the red kite. And there was lots of red kites seen wandering around the county in March. And our very own Matt Davidson saw one. You were at...
I was up on Sutherland with Emma, my wife. And, we just saw a pair. They came incredibly close.
I was out of range at the time, but when I got back in range, I had this one missed call and a little excited Matt Davison on the phone.
Yeah, poor Michael, he gets these.
No, gets these messages. Keep on coming, man. Keep on coming.
But, yeah, it was really exciting.
Excellent. Well, it's just fantastic. That's great, because you saw the red kite and the bird race.
Mm.
Fantastic, yeah. You're a red kite magnet. I'm going to finish off now with, of course, the moment everyone's been waiting for. You may recall in the last episode we discussed the big news story in Seaford, where a large black panther a panther has somehow got into someone's house and they chased it around with a shillelagh. Yeah. Anyway, the experts came along. They said, big black cat, yeah, green eyes under the games table. Yes, it's a panther. Definitely a panther. And
I'm convinced.
So, yeah, so that was a news story. But, you know, we weren't so convinced, were we? And in fact, Graham, you were not very convinced at all, were you?
No, no.
However, you can't argue with the evidence, because they actually found some fur under that games table or on the shillelagh or somewhere. It was sent away for analysis, and we have the results.
I bet it's a fox.
So, and the winner is... The fur found at the Seaford Big Cat sighting last month was sent off to a lab and microscopically analysed, and it was proved to be a domestic cat.
Oh, domestic cat! Yeah. You know what? That's a real shock.
It was a cat. It was a big cat. It was just a big cat.
Maybe it was Timmy.
Yeah, maybe it was Timmy next door, yeah. But anyway, so it was a cat. So all that stuff about it was definitely a panther, and they found it was a cat. It was a cat under a cat got into someone's house. So anyway, but of course, it doesn't stop there, because people are going to continue to see these made-up animals in the countryside. So we're going to start a new section of the show. It'll be an occasional section. It's going to be lions versus panthers. Right, now, what we're going to do is, every now and again, I shall read out a sighting. I read out the sighting, and we shall put it to Graham Lyons, and you tell us what you think it is, and I'll tell you what they thought it was, okay? So here's a sighting. It comes from Nutley in East Sussex on March the 12th. And here's the quote. I saw a small deer making off at speed. A short while after, something followed it. I was sure it was not a dog. It had a fairly long coat, light fawn in colour, bushy appearance, hindquarters seemed higher than the front. What did they see, Graham?
Fox.
No, I'm sorry, my friend. It was a lynx. They saw a lynx. A lynx sighting there at Nutley in East Sussex. And the quote is, although the witness was not sure that it was indeed a lynx, after in-depth analysis of the big cat description, there can be no other animal that fits the bill.
There can be no other animal.
Case closed.
Yeah.
Case closed. So there we are. So we now have a lynx. We had a panther last month. We now have a lynx running around in East Sussex.
I mean, that logic is just ridiculous, isn't it? Once we have ruled out all the things that it could possibly be, then all that is left is the impossible.
Yeah. Right.
I think that wraps it up for episode...
Episode 6.
Episode
Don't
6.
Worry, it's late.
Episode
it's 6. Early.
Yeah.
It's
late. Yeah, goodness. Yeah, it's actually 1 on the dot. 1 o'clock on the dot.
1 o'clock on the dot.
We're calling it a day, a
We're
night,
a, night
morning.
A morning.
Yep. And
good evening,
we
welcome.
Will see you next month with more adventures. I don't know what we can do next month.
Oh, I know what's next month. It's going to be... Oh, no. You're going to love next month.
I think it's next month is going to be a rather violent adventure.
No, we're talking...
There's a chance we could die.
Yeah, we're talking about alien animals. We're actually going to look for the one thing in Sussex that could actually kill us.
Oh. That could kill Matt.
Well, Matt, yeah.
Good times. So see you next month.
See you next time.
Goodbye.
Bye.
1 saved message.
Hey, Michael, it's Matt. I can't believe it, but there's a pair of red kites just hunting around us and getting really, really close. It's so beautiful. But anyway, buddy, hope you're having a nice weekend, and I'll speak to you soon. Cheers, mate. Bye.